FMEA, or Failure Modes and Effects Analysis, or the C stands for criticality, are two tools that we use that are very similar to each other, but we are representative of what we would do during a design process or any other step along the life cycle to understand what the risks of failure are and do a prioritization as to which ones that we need to address and make improvements for our product. It's basically an idea of stepping through our product and its design in the design stage, whether in concept or prototype or ready for production, and asking the question is, what could go wrong? What are the failure modes? How can the functions not actually occur? What could get in the way with that? Now, it's a challenge for somebody that actually is the lead designer for a product. They've thought through as many things as they could and addressed all of the things they thought were salient in order to make a robust design. And then we gather up 5 to 10 interested people in that particular design or product and sit around and tell them about how many different ways the product cannot work. This could fail, or that could fail, or this could go wrong, or this could sequence of events could happen, and so on. And it can be brutal for somebody that's pretty sensitive for all of this failure talk about their baby. So that's not the intent, is to belittle or to demean the design or the designer. The idea is to look for and understand how it's possible that what are the potential ways a product can fail. And then from that, sort out what are the items that we need to address before we move forward with the program. How do we prioritize what to work on? So the basic idea is this: it's a structured brainstorm, is for the lack of a better word, where we look at individual functions or different elements of a product or different subsets of a product or the entire system at a functional level, or we could look at down to a component level and look at its manufacturing process. But we ask the question over and over again is what could go wrong? What's the potential failure mode here? So if it's too much variability, what happens if the doping in the PN junction is too high or too low? Will it still function? Probably not. And then we step through and ask about each of those failure modes, what's the effect of that? It's the so what question. So if the transistor doesn't work, what happens? So does the product create a safety problem, or does it just not function, or is it even noticeable? And then we also look at the occurrence. And this is really just how often we think something will occur. Oftentimes this is based on experience from the team. In some cases, you may go off and find information that talks about the actual probabilities of different failure modes occurring, different causes of the failure modes occurring, I should say. So part of the occurrence is based on, well, how often does the cause, the underlying initiating cause, occur that then leads to the failure, which then results in the effects, the consequence part of it. And there may well be multiple causes for a particular failure mode. So there's a many-to-one relationship there. But we'll rate these, we'll rank order these as to which is most severe and which is not so bad and which is most common occurring, and then low numbers would be how many are very, very rare occurrence. Then the controls part of it is, and this has a couple different aspects to it. One is, does the product itself, the system itself, have an ability to detect a failure cause before it results in the effects? So my car right now has a little startup routine when you fire up the car, and one of the things it does is checks the air pressure in the car's tires, and it gives me a warning if one of those tire pressures is too low. And it's if the tire pressure is low, it causes the problem of poor handling. It may cause other problems, but it can be dangerous. So what they've done is set up a set of an ability to detect a condition that may lead to a very bad effect or a consequence, say a car crash. And then I have the ability to do something about that. I can take it to a service station and put some more air in it, or find my compressor and put some air in it and do something about it. The same is true of the engine oil light. So if you start up your car and you notice that light comes on, it's one, it's checking to see if it works, but then if it stays on, or if it comes on when you're operating, it's an indicator that you don't have enough lubricant or oil in your engine. If you continue to operate the engine, it's likely you're going to cause a lot of damage to the engine block, and that can be very, very costly. So the idea is that if you do get an engine oil light on, it's given you a very limited amount of time. I think it's on the order of not that many miles, and it obviously depends on temperature and other conditions, but you have a chance to go add oil before you have the serious consequence of having to replace your engine in your vehicle. So that's one style of this controls or detection rating. The other one that we commonly use when we're doing the development process for a product is how are we going to test the prototypes to see if this failure cause actually exists or not. And so what are we going to do in production, or what are we going to do in the supply chain to make sure that the source of variability, the adverse effects, or the poor material, or the inadequate dimensions, or whatever it is that would lead to the failures, doesn't occur? And can we detect it? And again, we get to give it a score. So if we're not able to detect the cause before we actually get the consequence, then it would have a very high number. If it's easy to detect and we have ample time to avoid or avert any problems, then it would have a low number. So the basic idea is we come up with a risk priority number, which is the product of the severity score, the probability score, or the occurrence score, and the detection score, or the controls. And oftentimes we use like a 1 to 5 scale or a 1 to 10 scale. Each group may do this slightly different. But the idea is that the high numbers are a really bad, maybe a safety problem kind of consequence. And a high occurrence would be it happens all the time or very frequently relative to everything else. And controls is the only time we know about it is when it happens. So the idea is that those items that cause harm to people or cause an explosion, for example, and happen relatively frequently, and we can't detect it until it actually occurs, are items that would come up with the highest numbers. And those would be the ones we would want to address and minimize. So ideally, we would take care of the severity, mitigate it so that the consequence just doesn't happen as bad. One phrase I've heard is that it would fail cold rather than explode, or that we minimize the probability of occurrence. Maybe we put in redundant safety systems, or we put in the ability to withstand higher stresses or loads, for example. And then the third option is, can we detect it and shut it down safely, which is harder to do in some cases, but it may be the only option. So the idea is that you get this long list of what could go wrong and its various causes and our abilities to control it. But then we continue to evolve the product by working off the ones with the highest risk priority number. And then it's supposed to be a living document. I've rarely seen it operated that way. But it should be a process of continuing to update what we've learned about the product, its consequences, the failure modes, causes, and our ability to detect them, and then update and reorder the priorities from this kind of a study. So this is a real eye chart, but it's a an excerpt from a book by Carl Carlson on FMEA, where he talks, and this is just an example of one of the spreadsheets. And typically, we start with a function. What's the product supposed to do, for example? And maybe provide some specifications on that. And this is about a light for an image transfer system, I think it is. And it looks like it's for a photocopier, if I remember the example right. And one of the ways it could fail is that that lamp burns out. And the consequence is that customer dissatisfied, we don't get the image. And so the severity, we're just going to score it an 8. But in this case, there's the lamp shatters, and it has the potential to injure the person using the system. So it gets a higher score. And so on. We look at the causes. And here there's 3 causes for this one potential failure mode. And we score those. And it also is possible to have more than one defect or detection or control for each item. And again, it would be many to one type scenario. But at the end of the day here, we're going to take this 3 times 5 is 15 times 8 is 120 and so on. And we look down that this one, which was pretty difficult to detect whether this sneak circuit is occurring and causing corrosion and inadequate light and so on. So we get customer dissatisfaction and customer dissatisfaction. It occurs fairly often and it's hard to detect. So that gets a very high score relative to the other ones. So what can we do to break this chain and minimize its score, which translates into being more reliable for the customer? That's the idea of an FMEA. It's an organized brainstorm. And the basic steps, and I often use the book called Basics, the Basic FMEA. I think that's what it's called. I'm trying to think if I've got it listed here or not. I'll put it in the notes for the lesson. But it lists basically, I think it's 8 or 9, or maybe it's 10 steps. And they're spelled out in pretty clean way, and many different references list these steps, very similar steps, is understand what's the process, what it is that you're trying to analyze, what's the design. So when you bring the team together, and it is a team event, it's not done by a single person or it's not outsourced. But let's say we're looking at a design. So people that are familiar with that design, maybe the designer himself, bring together some folks that are experts in different aspects of this product, maybe somebody from the supplier, the key supplier for the system, and so on, 5 to 10 people. Then understand what's the boundaries of what you're studying, what's included and not included, whether it's a process or a product. And then the brainstorming starts. What could go wrong? What are the failure modes? And then step through, what are the effects? Score them as a severity. What are the causes? Score them with how often they would occur. Can we detect it and interrupt the process before we have the consequences? Or can we detect it and design it out of the product? What's our capability there? Calculate risk priority numbers, prioritize those, and determine what you can do to minimize the high scores. Update your model, step and repeat, do it again. That's the basic process. But one of the things, and I mentioned this a few times, is I mentioned failure modes, and hopefully you're familiar with failure mechanisms. So failure mode is the symptom. It's what the customer sees. Is when I got into the car, if I didn't have a sensor telling me that I had low tire pressure, I may notice that the car pulls to one side, or that it's sluggish and turning, or that it's not level. Might even be a rough ride because of a flat tire. So those are what I would sense as the person driving the car. Now the actual cause, the failure mechanism, might be a poor seal, or it might be a worn tire, or it might be a bad valve, or it might be a nail in the tire, causing a slow leak. The mechanisms can be many and varied that causes the symptom that I see. Right? And sometimes it's a long chain that occurs, and there's 3, 4, 5 things that have to occur in order for the failure mode to manifest itself. So typically we look for those direct cause goes straight to the consequence. In other cases, we look at corrosion, which may take time, that may affect a sensor that then doesn't allow the system to operate correctly. And then another item gets the wrong signal, and then the car crashes, and just on and on and on. You can list to your great imagination all the different scenarios. The key with the failure modes and effects analysis is to sort through the ones that are salient, ones that are important. Most design teams and designers have a pretty good idea of what is likely to fail. It's a really good place to start. Now, I didn't mention criticality analysis, and there's a couple different rules or thoughts about what that is. The easiest one is that it's the product of the severity and the occurrence is the criticality line. And it's also used in that structure as a hazards analysis is another term that's used there. Now, it can also be defined as how critical is it to meeting the customer's expectations or critical to safety. It could be defined a number of different ways, but it just adds another factor into the risk priority number is a way to do this. Now, I did have a client once that when I was asking them about their reliability program, everybody agreed that they did FMEA. They did the risk analysis, and they knew it was done for every program. But when I got to, well, how has it made a difference to improve your design? I says, well, it never has. We always outsource it because it's a customer requirement. And so we outsource, we send the bill of materials to this other company. They create the FMEA document, which they send directly to the customer, and then they pay for it. So it doesn't really impact our design at all. Now, the requirement to do the FMEA was probably with the intent that it would actually improve the product. And yet the execution of that requirement was anything but helping the product, improve the product at all. Now, most good designers think through what could go wrong anyway. But then formalizing that into an FMEA or FMECA allows the team to do a couple of things. Is one, collectively understand what could go wrong with the product and where the design needs to be improved. But it also helps them understand where the resources for improvements really need to go. And so instead of competing within the team for the scarce resources, let's collectively work on the ones that are most likely to improve the durability of the product, make it a safe and reliable system. So in my mind, outsourcing FMEA is generally the wrong people with the wrong expertise providing a document that very few people will read or use. So I don't really think of it as useful. Now, of course, there may be exceptions from that. But in my experience, they've not been useful and have been rather counterproductive. So another way things can fail is where it has a common mode failure. And we'll take a look at that in the next segment.